This week's parsha, we have an important mitzvah which doesn't really apply to everybody. It's a mitzvah of losasu avel bamishpat. That is the din that you're not allowed to pervert the justice at all. So when we talk about batei dinim, there's a lot to discuss, and about perverted batei dinim. Unfortunately, many people have had experiences that are less than pleasant. But let's first begin with the following. We know that there are many mitzvos midaraisa and midirabanan that we perform throughout the year. And the Rashba asks a question in a tshuva. After all, we have a mitzvah to set up a justice system, to set up batei dinim, shoftim v'shotrim titim lecha v'chol sha'arecha. So how come all of a sudden when it comes to this mitzvah, we don't find that a bracha is recited? By every other mitzvah that we do, we recite a bracha. So how come over here, when we set up, when we establish a bezdin, or before we begin to adjudicate a particular case, why don't we recite a bracha? Says the Rashba as follows. Tshuva, the answer is zusha'ela amuka. This is a very difficult question, how to determine which mitzvahs require a bracha to be recited and which not. V'davar she'amdu alav harishonim, he said, those who came before me already tried to figure out what is the rule. How do you figure out what the principle is with regard to when a bracha should be recited on a mitzvah and when perhaps it should not. V'nistabchu bo harbe, and he says they had difficulty really trying to pin down the rule and figure out when do we say a bracha, when do we not. V'ezu she'mevarchem aleha v'ezu she'en mevarchem aleha. And he says, the bottom line is, I can't give you one ironclad rule because not everything is going to fit into a rule, but I can tell you a few things. He says, number one, kol mitzvah she'ein ba ma'isa, any mitzvah that doesn't have any action by the person as the mitzvah is being fulfilled, ein mevarchem aleha, you don't make a bracha on such a mitzvah. For example, what's a mitzvah that you don't do any action? So he says, for example, the mitzvah of hashmatas ksafim. This is a mitzvah that when the year of Shemitah comes around, we should just forgo the loans. Now, by the way, that doesn't mean that if you owe someone money and now Shemitah comes around, that now you don't have to pay them back anymore. Of course you have to pay them back. Just me as the lender, I'm not able to go, lo yigos esrieu, I can't go ahead and push you to pay me back. But you, as an individual, still have the same obligation that you had before. Let's make no mistake. So number one, he says, when you're not doing any practical mitzvah, when you're not doing anything with your hands, so then the halacha is a bracha is not recited. That's number one. Then he says, "Ein mevarchem al mitzvah she'ena tluya kula biyada oseh." You cannot recite a bracha on a mitzvah that is not dependent on me. So if I have a lulav, I can make a bracha on it because I'm about to shake it. If I have a shofar, I can make a bracha, I'm about to do it. However, he says, what if you have a mitzvah that you need somebody else to accept? For example, he says, "Matanos aniyim." Before I give tzedakah to someone, what am I going to sit there and make a bracha? Maybe the person's going to run away before I give them the money. They say the famous story about the... There's a Pischei Tshuva that discusses what bracha should a person make if, Rachmana Litzlan, God forbid, a person is ever in a situation of having to give their life up al Kiddush Hashem. So when the Nachri is standing there and making you give up your life, do you make a bracha, Asher Kedushan, Mitzvosev, Tzivanu al Mitzvos, Kiddush Hashem Shamayim, or something like that? So they say the story about the Brisker, that there was a Nachri who came to him and said he wanted him to violate a certain Aveira, and he said, no, I have to give up my life. So the Nachri said, he pulls out his gun, he's about to kill him, he says, just 1 minute, let me say the bracha. So you know, the briskers are very scrupulous with their davening and their bracha, so he's standing there having all the kavana, mustering up all the strength, and he's thinking, Sher kedushanu mitzvosev tzivanu, lamas al kiddush Hashem, or lekadosh shem shamayim, whatever you say. And he opens his eyes, and he sees the guy was so frightened, he ran away. So he was afraid it's going to be a bracha levatelah, so he starts running after him, he says, nu, don't run away now. So that's what they say. That's what the Rashba says. How can you say a bracha whenever you have a mitzvah that you need somebody else to do a part of the mitzvah? How do you know they're going to do it? Maybe you're going to take the money out from your wallet, and while you're looking through the change in your pocket, and you're about to give it, and you're making the bracha, maybe the ani's not going to be there anymore. Maybe he's going to walk away to get someone else. So therefore, the Rashba says, generally, when you have a mitzvah that you need somebody else to perform, that you need somebody else to be a companion of yours in order to fulfill it, so we don't recite a bracha on a mitzvah like that. Or he says, if you have a situation like a bezdin, this is the example that he gives. When we sit down to adjudicate a case, he says, maybe lo yikablu bale hadin as daitam. Maybe the litigants, maybe the people who come for the din Torah won't accept my ruling. So how can I make a bracha, asher kedushan mitzvot tzivanu, to do the mitzvah of shoshim and shotim titin lecha v'chol sha'arecha, or whatever the bracha might be, maybe the people aren't going to accept it. So again, that's a very difficult argument to make. Because if I'm doing my best, and I'm putting in whatever God gave me, all the chachma that I have, all the talent that I have, and trying to take care of the case to the best of my ability, and I'm being responsible about it, what do I care if they don't accept? What do I care if they don't accept? How come I shouldn't make a bracha anyway? Meaning, I'm doing my best, I render a psak, they choose not to listen, so they choose not to listen. And the Chassam Sofer says, an offshoot of this, he says, maybe I'm going to give the wrong psak. How can you make a bracha? Meaning, if I shake a lulav, I know I'm doing the right thing. If I blow a shofar, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. But if I give a psak, maybe I'm making a mistake. Maybe I overlooked a detail in the story. Maybe it's not 100%. So how can I make a bracha on something that is not 100%? So the later Achronim say, what do you mean it's not 100%? If a person gives the Din Torah their most honest opinion, their feeling of what they really think is the right psak, so then what does God expect of you? It's similar to the discussion the Ramah has by Bedikas Chametz. Do I really have to put out the 10 pieces of chametz? Or do you say, no, really it's good enough, you can make the bracha, even if you don't find any chametz, because after all, you're doing the mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz, and if nothing ends up being found, so nothing ends up being found. So that's the same question over here. Why is it that there's no bracha that's recited on the Din Torah? Not really so clear. So some say maybe the answer is, I think the Stechemet writes like this, maybe the answer is as follows. Whenever a person recites a bracha, you say, Asher Kedishanu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu. The reason why I'm doing what I'm doing is because I have such an elevated status of Kedusha. God gave me so many mitzvahs that I can perform, and therefore I'm doing this activity. Now, you think about it. Why do we set up a judicial system? Why do we have courts? Why do we have Dinei Torah? Is it only because we're Jews? No. The Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach dictate that you have to have a just system of checks and balances in your country. You have to make sure that you have a justice system that's going to be set up. So therefore, you can say a bracha asher kedishanu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu. The reason why I'm sitting down to adjudicate this particular case is because God gave me such an inherent kedusha, and God asked me to do with that the following. That's not true. Even if I wasn't Jewish, I would have an obligation to make sure that there was a justice system set up in my community. So these are some suggestions, but basically it certainly is a mitzvah to go to a Din Torah. It's a mitzvah to go to a Jewish Beis Din, if the Beis Din is not a corrupt one, so we have an obligation to do so. And that's a separate question why we don't make a bracha. As part of that halacha, we're told, Lo sasu avel b'mishpat. When the Beis Din gets together to adjudicate any given scenario, any case that's going on, they have to be careful to do it fairly and to do it honestly. And the Rambam writes, part of that obligation is, Shelo l'chayev es hazakai velo lifter es hachayev. You're not allowed to say, oh, well, this one can use a little bit more money. Maybe I'll just tip the case in his scale. The other one's a multimillionaire. He doesn't care if he loses the case. The answer is no. You have to be absolutely honest. And you cannot say just because one is wealthy or one is poor that you're going to change it in any direction. Part of that halacha, the Shach writes also, is Shelo la'aveis es hadin, is that you're not allowed to change the psak, not only when it comes to monetary matters and say, oh, you're obligated to pay more or less based on your financial status, but also, says the Shach, what if I'm a rabbi and somebody calls me up with a shayla in their kitchen, in Isser v'Heter, and I say, what? They have a shayla on this and this pot. They can afford to buy a whole new set of pots. They can afford to make a whole new kitchen. Look, they're redoing the house. What do I should give them the kula? The answer is, if the psak is that it's mutter, you have to tell them that it's mutter. You can't say, oh yeah, you can afford it, it's usser. That's not really proper. That's not correct. And that would be a violation, says the Shach, of this halacha of lo sasu aval b'mishpat. It doesn't just mean in a Beis Din setting. It means whenever you're being trusted for an opinion on any halachic matter, you have to tell them the absolute truth. And the later Achronim write that if it's a chumra, say somebody calls me up with a shayla in their kitchen, and the truth is, there's room to be machmir, but it's just a chumra. Really, me'ikar adin, the strict letter of the law is that it's mutter. There are those who are machmir. Say the Achronim, you have to say that also. That really, the strict letter of the law is that this is permissible. There are those who are scrupulent, there are those who go ahead and are more careful, but I'm not telling you what to do. You should know that these are the options. You should know that this is the strict letter of the law. You cannot pass off the chumra as being the ikar adin. So these are very clear rules and regulations when it comes to Dinei Torah, when it comes to a psak halacha. Person has to be as honest as possible and make sure that they render a psak that is as responsible as they possibly can. So there's a fascinating shaila when it comes to Dinei Torah, and that is, yes, we know that under regular circumstances, a person never has a right to be ma'aveis es hadin, to ever change the psak from what it's supposed to be. You have to say the honest truth, you have to say the absolute truth, and you cannot take into account whether or not the person could afford it, cannot afford it, wealthy, poor. You have to give the right psak. But here the shaila goes as follows. The Kloizemerger Rebbe wanted to know, he was once on a Din Torah, and he said, he realized that he's dealing with a real criminal, a real crook. And he said if he's going to obligate him to pay the entire amount of money that they're fighting about, which was really what he thought. He said, let's say they came for a Din Torah, $50,000. I think you're totally in the wrong. You're an absolute criminal, credit card fraud, whatever it was. You have to pay $50,000. I know if I tell him he has to pay $50,000, he's going to pay nothing. So maybe I'll knock it down. I'll tell him, look, I hear both sides. I looked at the case very carefully. I looked into it. I did all my research. I did my homework. You have to pay $25,000. That's how much you're obligated to pay. This way, at least the defendant will walk away with $25,000. If I give the real psak, if I say you have to pay the real amount, which is $50,000, he's going to walk away with nothing. So the Klozmerger Rebbe said he wasn't sure. Should I give a psak that I know is not honest in order that it should bring about a greater result? It should bring about some good at least the person will pay some of the money. Or do you say no? You have to give the psak the honest psak. And however the chips will fall, whether the person's going to pay or not, that's God's business. But your job as a dayan, your job as the person who's rendering, who's issuing the psak is, you have to say what you think is the proper psak, and you cannot start taking into equation, well, maybe he's going to win, maybe he's going to lose, maybe he's going to pay money, maybe he won't. You have to do what you have to do. This is the shaila that he has. So he quotes a similar case, a very fascinating story. So we have a halacha that the Gemara talks about, and that is that every time you have a bezdin of regular monetary matters, you have to have three dayanim. Why do you have three dayanim? This way, in case one dayan says yes, one dayan says no, so you say the third person will be the majority. Either he's going to say yes or no, and then that's what you're going to follow. Achari Rav Nahatu. So you always have to add an odd number of dayan. What happens if you have one person says yes, one person says no, and the third says any yodeh, inconclusive. I don't know. I'm so confused by all the evidence back and forth. Everybody's screaming and yelling. I don't know where we're up to anymore. I recuse myself from the case. I don't know what to do. So the Gemara says, Yosifu Adayanim. In such a case, that's not really fair. One person says yes, one says no. You can't just leave it like that. Now the third guy takes himself out of the equation, so you have to say, we have to add more judges to the case in order that they should be able to weigh in on the situation as well. So the Pischei Tshuva quotes the following story. You have three Dayanim who are adjudicating a case. And the Dayanim go ahead and they say, you know, this one says he's chayiv, the next one says he's chayiv, and the third one says, look, this person is so innocent. These two guys were paid off. These two dayanim were paid off. They're crooks. They're criminals. That's why they're saying he's chayiv, because they were paid off. They're all biased. They're all one-sided. But if I say that he's pater, what's going to happen? They're going to outvote me, and then the innocent is going to be guilty. So maybe I'll recuse myself. I'll say any yodea. I'll lie and I'll say, I don't know. I'm too confused. I don't know where the evidence is up to anymore. This case was too complicated. I don't know what to do. By doing that, what happens? Now we're going to have to add on more judges to the case. And hopefully the next set of judges will be honest. And they'll be able to outvote these two criminals. So that's a fascinating shaila. So there was a major machlokus in the times of the Shvus Yaakov and the Beis Yaakov and others about whether or not a dayan has a right to lie, even though he knows in the depths of his heart that really the psak is chayiv or pater, whatever it is, but the other two people he knows are criminals, the other two people on the bezdin with him are not honest people. So he says, the only way to make sure that their psak doesn't go through is if I lie and I don't give my real opinion and I say, eini yodea, I don't know. This way I pull myself out of the case, and now we're going to have to add new dayanim. Is that permissible or do we say no? Your job is to issue the psak that's supposed to be given. Beyond that is God's job. God will figure out who pays and who doesn't pay and whether they follow the psak or not. That's not your job as a dayan. That is the job of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And finally, there's another famous machlokes, which is between the Or HaChaim HaKadosh and other achronim, about the following case. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Sanhedrin Sharo Kulam Lechova. When you have a death row and you have 23 dayanim all sitting around deciding whether or not somebody should get the death penalty. So the Gemara says, what if you take the votes, you go around to all 23, and all 23 of them say, absolutely guilty, he must get the death penalty. Says the Gemara, pochunosa miyad. Pochunosa miyad, which means, we let him off the hook. Why do you let him off the hook? What do you mean? 23 people just said he's guilty. How can you let him off the hook? Says the Gemara, because it obviously means they didn't work hard enough to really understand the case. There's not one person in the room that could find one shred of evidence that maybe he's innocent. Must be, you didn't work hard enough, you didn't do your homework, therefore he goes off free. What if you have 22 of them that say guilty and one says innocent? So you follow the 22 and the one is outvoted. So now the shaila goes as follows. Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz and the other achronim discuss what happens in the following case. They already took a vote from 22. All 22 people said guilty. I'm the 23rd person who's going to cast my vote. If they ask me and I say guilty, what happens? The guy gets off free. He walks away innocent. If I say that he's innocent, then what's going to happen? That is going to be 22 against 1, and then he's going to be guilty. So maybe I have a right to lie and say, I think this man is innocent in order that justice should be served to him, in order that he should get his punishment, he should get what he deserves. So that's the shadow the Acharonim discuss. Again, do the ends justify the means? The reason why I'm saying something that is not 100% true is because I want to bring about a greater good. But does a Dayan really have a right to do that? Does a Rav have a right to make such a calculation when you make a psak? I think these people should be more machmir in their life. Therefore, I'm going to tell them the pot is treif. What right do you have to do that? I think in Hilchos Nida they're very lacking. So therefore, I'm going to snap on a new chumr and I'm going to tell them this is us or that's us. What right do you have to do that? You have to be honest. Shalola avis es hadin to say what the psak is. You don't have a right to make outside calculations and say, well, I think the people should be more machmir in this area. I think they can use a little help in that area, and therefore I'm going to change the psak. Generally, we assume that that's something that is unwarranted. That's something that is out of bounds for a rabbi or a rav or a posek to do, because you were given the Torah just to transmit it the way it was given to you, and you're not supposed to make all kind of political or personal considerations to try to figure out whether the psak is something that should be changed in a particular case, given your personal reasons why you think it should be different. The psak is the psak, and it's something we have to be very careful about. Lo sasu elo b'mishpat is in this week's parsha, and it's something that doesn't only apply, as we mentioned, to a bez, and it's something that applies in general, in life, and in general to a psak that is ever given, that you have to be very honest and careful about what it is that is said and how exactly it is presented to the people who ask.